David Hawkins is editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government. He's also former senior editor of CQ and Roll Call. So now we have lots of questions for you today. David, we've been with you for a couple of days, and we love what you have to say. Okay, so the first question is, Joe Biden's going to be the president, we think. What will the Democrats be able to get through Congress? Biden claimed a mandate on Saturday, but the margins in Congress are tight, and the Senate, we don't know yet.
So I think, right, it, obviously it will make a huge difference whether, just to stop and say, whether these two Georgia seats, which will decide control of the Senate, whether they both, if they both go Democratic, it's a 50-50 Senate, Kamala Harris as the vice president breaks a tie. Obviously, if that happens, it's a different agenda than if Mitch McConnell remains majority leader, which, you know, I don't know, coin flip at this point, a lot, many, many weeks to go. But either way, I think it's going to be a more or less a centrist agenda. Talk of the green, we should just, you know, talk of the Green New Deal can be set aside, can be put in a drawer. You know, talk of a public option for Medicare for all can be put in a drawer and put aside. Job one, of course, coronavirus, the economy. I think you'll see this will be, I'm hoping this will be one area in which Mitch McConnell and the Republicans feel like they need to do a deal. Now, there is talk still of Pelosi and Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker, Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, still trying to work out some kind of a modest stimulus bill by the end of the year. We've been hearing that now since, you know, June. I'm not sure that there's the momentum to get that done in the so-called lame duck session. Instead, I think you'd look for McConnell and Biden to negotiate something early in the new year. And just to pause and say, I said this yesterday, I think, McConnell and Biden have a long and storied history of getting things done. It was sort of a cliche on the Hill when I was up there every day. And there was a standoff of fiscal cliff, or you name it, time and time again, extension of tax cuts, positions hardened until the last possible moment, and then everybody said, "All right, it's time to get McConnell and Biden in a room, and they'll figure something out." And that happened several times.
Got it. Do you think Biden is better off if the Senate is in Republican hands by a couple of votes? Because otherwise, the so-called, in quotes, progressives in the Democratic Party are going to be all over him to do the very things which you said you should put in a draw.
That's a great point. I mean, it would give you know, the Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez's of the world sort of a less of a leg to stand on if they were in the minority. So that's quite an interesting point. Looking way down the road, and nobody wants, you know, I mean, we're overdue for action in this country on lots of issues. But looking, you know, only 2 years down the road, the so-called Senate map actually gets better for the Democrats in 2022 than it was this year. So, you know, that's a very long game. That's a very long waiting game. But it may be his best move.
David Hawkins, let's talk about Kamala Harris. Now, she really is quite exciting in her presentation and the way she speaks. A lot of people think that, you know, sooner or later she's going to be president of the United States. Now she's vice president. She's got some black heritage, some Indian heritage. She's got, you know, all of these various, she's married to a Jewish guy. How's she doing? How's she showing up so far?
You know, I think so far she's calibrated it just right. I mean, right, hers was the history-making election. I mean, Joe Biden's election was obviously vitally important and the most important, but she was the barrier breaker as the first woman to be in elected national office. I guess if you discount the speakership of the House, she was elected by the whole country to office, the first woman of color, the first woman. As you say, she's black. Her middle name is Devi, which will, on Inauguration Day, you'll hear the words Kamala Devi Harris spoken. That's kind of, it's an amazing thing. Now, my answer is, she seems to be allowing that history barrier-breaking thing to happen while still playing the role of the loyal vice president, which is, I mean, to be vice president, you know, we all know the cliches, bucket of warm whatever.
Spit, that is.
That's actually not what he said.
Oh, it isn't?
Oh, no.
I thought he said bucket of warm spit. Go ahead.
No, everybody says spit, but he used a different four-letter word that starts with P.
Oh, I get it. And ends with S.
You're correct. that's what you learn when your first political job is covering Texas. And this was John Nance Garner, the Democratic Speaker of the House, and later Vice President. So, she is playing the role. She's going to wait. My guess is that in ways that we have not yet learned, she and Biden are negotiating sort of the terms of her work, her portfolio. It'll be fascinating to see what particular job she's assigned. Famously, Joe Biden, when he agreed to become Barack Obama's running mate, he said, "I'll do so on one condition, which is I'm the last one in the room with the president, with you, Mr. Obama, before the decisions are made. I want to basically be the last one to put a word in your ear." There is some reporting that Kamala Harris was given the same promise. So she will be poised to be a very powerful vice president. She, of course, for all the demographic reasons that we know, that Joe Biden will be the oldest person ever to become president, ever to start a presidency. My guess is that Joe Biden will take very, very seriously the notion of having a vice president who is fully read in, who is empowered to a significant degree, and who, if should something befall Joe Biden, would be ready to take the reins at a moment's notice.
I'm running out of time with you, but I want to ask you some key questions. First of all, let's talk about the Supreme Court. There was talk about expanding the Supreme Court. Do you think that's going to happen?
No. That's got to go. That goes in the drawer. It has Medicare for all.
What if the existing justices 6-3 misbehave terribly? Why wouldn't that come up again?
Well, I mean, it'll come up. It's just the votes aren't there. I mean, I suppose if both Democrats win in Georgia and there's a 50-50 Senate, theoretically, I suppose it could happen. But in order for that to happen, you'd have to break the filibuster. We haven't even gotten around to talking about breaking the filibuster. Remembering, just to do this for our listeners in one sentence, the filibuster, the 60-vote threshold, the so-called filibuster 60-vote threshold, was taken away for all nominations. That's why Justice Amy Coney Barrett is on the court right now. But it was not taken away for almost all kinds of legislation. And the only way to take it away would be a very, very harsh 51-50 vote. There are some who argue that the vice president shouldn't vote in that situation. There's also some conservative Democrats who wouldn't want to go with Chuck Schumer on this. So I think the filibuster is here to stay.
Tell me about the Electoral College. Is there any real impetus for change of that, or is that another thing that should go in the drawer?
No, I think that one, there is real impetus for that, and it's something that several states in the Northeast have already done, which is a state, there's this thing called, it sounds nerdy, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, which is commitments by the states to promise their electoral votes to the national popular vote winner, wait for it, once states with 270 electoral votes, i.e. the winning number, have done the same. So for now, there are 14 states with, I think, 196 electoral votes who have joined this pact. They're all blue states. No purple or let alone red states have done this. But there'll be a little bit more momentum for maybe some of the more purple states to do it this time.
David Hawkins, a fulcrum, we love having you on the show. You are one bright guy. And unlike some people, you know, who don't always get right to the heart of the matter, you do. And we so appreciate it. David Hawkins is the editor-in-chief of The Fulcrum, a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government. He's also former senior editor of Congressional Quarterly and Roll Call. Again, David, can't wait for the next time we get you.
Thanks. It's always a highlight of my week. Thank you so much, Alan.